This is the last in episode 9, The Truth About Vaccines, April 20th, 2020. May 1st, 2020. It's Friday. W period H period O apostrophe S. Who's not telling the truth?
Welcome to The Truth About Vaccines 2020, Episode 9, the final episode. We're your hosts, Ty and Charlene Bollinger.
In the last episode, we analyzed what's been happening across the USA with draconian mandatory vaccine laws and removal of religious and medical exemptions. We also covered the blatant censorship and suppression of any and all anti-vaccine sentiments by big tech giants.
Here's Bobby Kennedy recapping what's been happening over the past few years in the vaccine world and the censorship of any and all information that doesn't conform to the religious dogma that vaccines are safe and effective.
Well, you know, there's been a huge global drive by the vaccine industry to mandate vaccines and end public debate. So we've had a long-term censorship on network television, which receives, and you know, in the press, which receives about almost $10 billion a year from the vaccine companies, and you know, for advertising, etc. And so that allows them also to dictate content. So we've never been able to debate or discuss this issue in the mainstream press, but we were able to go to the social media. But in the last year, we've been completely shut down in social media. Google has become a vaccine company. Google now has a partnership with Glaxo. Google is making vaccines, and they're partnering with Merck. And they've completely shut down all discussion, what they call vaccine misinformation. That is not misinformation. It's information that is critical of a medical product, of a pharmaceutical product. Facebook has shut us down, Pinterest, MailChimp, all of the major social media platforms have shut us down. And then there's also been a push to mandate vaccines. This is a product that they know they could not sell in a marketplace, so they have to mandate them. And they know that they can't win the debate, so they have to censor it.
And they're not even hiding the censorship. Big Tech is openly admitting that they are going to censor anyone who questions the safety of vaccines or even hints that we should have better safety monitoring systems. So, based on those criteria, it looks like they're going to want to start censoring the World Health Organization soon.
Why, you might ask? There was a meeting which took place at the World Vaccine Safety Summit on December 3rd, 2019 in Geneva, Switzerland. Have you ever wondered what the World Health Organization's scientists and pediatricians say when they discuss vaccines behind closed doors?
Hold on to your seats, as you're going to get to see for yourself that what they tell us is vastly different than what they discuss in secret meetings. Interestingly, in attendance at this meeting was the World Health Organization's number one chief scientist, who is the face of the WHO, Dr. Soumya Swaminathan. Does that name sound familiar? If you watched episode 8, you saw her telling you this about vaccines.
Vaccines are very safe. That's why we have vaccine safety systems, robust vaccine safety systems. WHO works closely with countries to make sure that vaccines can do what they do best, prevent disease without risks.
Now, here's what she said less than a week after the World Health Organization ran that vaccines are very safe propaganda commercial. Thanks to Dell Bigtree and Highwire for this shocking footage.
I think we cannot overemphasize the fact that we really don't have very good safety monitoring systems in many countries, and this adds to the miscommunication and the misapprehensions, because we're not able to give clear-cut answers when people ask questions about the deaths that have occurred due to a particular vaccine, and this always gets blown up in the media. One should be able to give a very factual account of what exactly has happened and what the cause of deaths are. But in most cases, there's some obfuscation at that level. and therefore there's less and less trust then in the system.
Whoa! I thought vaccines were safe. I thought they had robust safety monitoring systems. I thought vaccines prevented disease without risks. That's what Dr. Swaminathan told us in the commercial, but then she said the exact opposite in closed-door meetings.
Here's Dr. Heidi Larson, the founding director of the Vaccine Confidence Project and former head of global immunization communication at UNICEF, describing safety science in the current vaccine program.
There's a lot of safety science that's needed, and without the good science, we can't have good communication. So although I'm talking about all these other contextual issues and communication issues, it absolutely needs the science as the backbone. You can't repurpose the same old science to make it sound better if you don't have the science that's relevant to the new problem. So we need much more investment in safety science.
Wait a minute, Dr. Larson, do you mean that science is lacking? We thought the science was settled. We thought that anyone who suggested that we needed more safety science was a conspiracy theorist, a nut job, an anti-vaxxer.
If Dr. Larson has a Facebook page, she better watch out, because she just violated their no anti-vaxxer policy by stating that we need more safety science. Next up is Dr. Marianne Gruber, the director of the Office of Vaccines Research and Review at the FDA.
One of the additional issues that complicates safety evaluation is if you look at and you struggle with the length of follow-up that should be adequate in a, let's say, pre-licensure or even post-marketing study, if that's even possible. And again, as you mentioned, pre-licensure clinical trials may not be powered enough. It's also the subject population that you administer the adjuvant to, because we've seen data presented to us where an adjuvant, a particular adjuvant added to a vaccine antigen, did really nothing when administered to a certain population, and it's usually the elderly, you know, compared to administering the same formulation to younger age strata. So these are things which need to be considered as well, and further complicate safety and effectiveness evaluation of adjuvants combined with vaccine antigens.
Did you get what Dr. Gruber just said? One of those pesky little things that complicate safety evaluations is the fact that the clinical trials, quote, may not be powered enough. And that fact really needs to be considered when evaluating safety. Let me translate. We don't have enough clinical trials to determine if vaccines are really safe or not, especially with the combination of antigens and adjuvants.
Here's Dr. Martin Howell-Frieda, coordinator of the World Health Organization Initiative for Vaccine Research, describing the association of adjuvants with vaccine injury and the need to build confidence in the vaccine program. You won't hear this on 60 Minutes.
Every time that there is an association, be it temporal or not temporal, the first accusation is it is the adjuvant. And yet, without adjuvants, we are not going to have the next generation of vaccines. And many of the vaccines that we do have, ranging from tetanus through to HPV, require adjuvants in order for them to work. So the challenge that we have in front of us is, how do we build confidence in this? And the confidence, first of all, comes from the regulatory agencies, to Marianne. When we add an adjuvant, it's because it is essential. We do not add adjuvants to vaccines because we want to do so. But when we add them, it adds to the complexity. And I give courses every year on how do you develop vaccines, how do you make vaccines. And the first lesson is, while you're making your vaccine, if you can avoid using an adjuvant, please do so. Lesson two is, if you're going to use an adjuvant, use one that has a history of safety. And lesson three is, if you're not going to do that, think very carefully.
It almost seems like he was insinuating that adjuvants were increasing the frequency of adverse reactions from vaccines.
It seems to me that adjuvants multiply the immunogenicity of the antigens that they are added to, and that is their intention. It seems to me they multiply the reactogenicity in many instances.
And therefore, it seems to me that it is not unexpected if they multiply the incidence of adverse reactions that are associated with the antigen, but may not have been detected through lack of statistical power in the original study.
Did he just say that adjuvants multiply the incidence of adverse reactions? Let's see how Dr. Martin Howell-Frieda responds.
You are correct. As we add adjuvants, especially some of the more recent adjuvants, such as the AS01 saponin-derived adjuvants, we do see increased local reactogenicity. The primary concern, though, usually is systemic adverse events rather than local adverse events. And we tend to get in the phase two and the phase three studies quite good data on the local reactogenicity. Those of us in this room that are beyond the age of 50 who have had the pleasure of having the recent shingles vaccine will know that this does have quite significant local reactogenicity. If you got the vaccine, you know that you got the vaccine. But this is not the major health concern. The major health concern which we are seeing are accusations of long-term effects. So, to come back to this, I'm going to once again point to the regulators. It comes down to ensuring that we conduct the phase two and the phase three studies with adequate size and with appropriate measurement.
Let me translate what he just said. When it comes to adjuvants and vaccines, we know when there are local reactions, like when you get a shot like in the shoulder and you get swelling at the point where you got the injection. But we have no freaking clue about systemic adverse events. And we really do need to design some phase two and phase three studies with adequate size and appropriate measurement to help us figure out if vaccines cause long-term adverse events.
Wait. Is this the same organization that 1 week before this summit had released a commercial stating vaccines are safe and they prevent disease without risk? Wow.
Yeah. So here's a response from Dr. David Kaslow about this small, in other words, inadequate sample sizes and the, quote, tyranny of small numbers. Listen to this.
So in our clinical trials, we are actually using relatively small sample sizes. And when we do that, we're at risk of tyranny of small numbers, which is you just need a single case of Wegener's granulomatosis, and your vaccine has to solve Waltz. How do you prove a null hypothesis? And it takes years and years to try to figure that out. So it's a real conundrum, right? Getting the right size, dealing with the tyranny of small numbers, making sure that you can really do it. And so I think one of the things that we really need to invest in are kind of better biomarkers, better mechanistic understanding of how these things work, so we can better understand adverse events as they come up.
Did you get that? Dr. Kaslow mentioned that since their sample size is so small when monitoring adverse events, that if one person is seriously injured, it takes a while to massage the numbers to make it appear that the vaccine is safe, and that's a real conundrum. And one of the needed investments is better biomarkers and a better understanding of adverse events.
I thought they had already invested in the safety monitoring system, but here we have the third or fourth person at this summit admitting they actually do not have safety systems in place.
And those are the people. They're not just people. These are the doctors and scientists who create vaccine policy for the world at the World Health Organization. Some of the doctors in attendance appeared truly concerned about these admissions. Here's a very good question from Dr. Bassi Okposun from Nigeria.
I cast back my mind to our situation in Nigeria, where at 6 weeks, 10 weeks, 14 weeks, a child is being given different antigens from different companies. And these vaccines have different adjuvants, different preservatives, and so on. Something crosses my mind. Is there a possibility of these adjuvants, preservatives, cross-reacting amongst themselves? Have there ever been a study on the possibility of cross-reactions on the panel members that you can share the experience with us?
Wow, great question. Dr. Okposun is truly concerned about his people in Nigeria and the adverse cross-reactions that can occur from injecting them with multiple vaccines with multiple adjuvants and multiple antigens.
Have studies ever been done on using multiple vaccines in combination? One of the doctors had that exact same question at the ACIP meeting in February of 2018. FYI, ACIP is the acronym for Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, which is an arm of the CDC.
Is there any comment on using this vaccine at the same time with other adjuvanted vaccines?
We have no data to make a recommendation one way or the other.
So just to sort of put this in context of other vaccines, while preclinical studies were not done using these vaccines simultaneously, our general approach to immunizations is that they can be given at the same time in different limbs.
When asked if there had ever been safety studies using multiple vaccines in combination, Dr. Sarah Sheely, member of the CDC's ACIP committee, said, "We have no data." In other words, no. Hearing her say that totally blew me away. I was literally speechless, and apparently so was the crowd at the ACIP meeting, because right after her comment, there's a long, awkward silence.
Yep, and then Amanda Cohn says, although we've never done studies on multiple vaccines given at the same time, which is most vaccines today, their general approach is that multiple vaccines with multiple adjuvants and multiple antigens can be given at the same time, as long as they're given in separate limbs. Seriously? That's about as stupid as saying that taking crystal meth and cocaine and heroin is safe as long as you inject the heroin, you smoke the crystal meth, and you snort the cocaine. Do other countries subscribe to this CDC nonsense?
Are multiple adjuvanted vaccines used in Europe or other markets?
Dr. Ward, do you want to comment?
Not to my knowledge.
So, Europe and other countries don't use multiple adjuvanted vaccines. We have no data to determine if they are safe, but we believe they are safe as long as you inject the kid in the bottom, the shoulder, the leg.
You'd think that someone would have spoken up at the CDC meeting where they are about to vote on adding yet another vaccine to the CDC's mandatory schedule. And they should have said something like, let's not vote on this until we're sure. You would think that would have happened.
Okay, I think unless there's any further discussion, we will take a vote on this recommendation.
I want to remind everyone to please check your voting whatever machine thing, and voting is open.
Thank you very much. So the voting is completed, and it is unanimous to support this recommendation. Thank you all.
Are you serious? Despite the admitted lack of safety studies, 100% of the CDC's ACIP committee voted to add this Hep B vaccine, or the Dynavax, to the vaccine list.
Be sure to check your voting whatever machine thingy.
The thingy.
Here's an interesting post-vote exchange.
And does anybody around the table, we don't need to go around and verify our votes, but does anybody have any comments they wish to make about their vote? Dr. Spence?
So just a slight reservation. I think this is a huge advance and a step forward. I am concerned about that signal, that myocardial infarction signal. I am concerned about the use of this new adjuvant, and certainly urge us to continue to look at the post-marketing data carefully.
Dr. Hunter?
Just a question about that. How soon would we be getting that post-marketing data update here?
There's two kinds of data. The vaccine safety data link data will require people to be using the vaccine to develop substantive database. And Dr. Sun, do you want to comment on the post-marketing data that FDA is requiring?
I think for the myocardial infarction study, we're seeing that the date for or likely for completion is May 31, 2020.
What did he mean by the myocardial infarction issue? That's doctor speak for heart attack, by the way. There had been 14 heart attacks in the first trial group. This vaccine had already been turned down twice by the FDA. As a matter of fact, Dr. Milton Packer, he's a medical doctor, He was one of the FDA's advisory committee. He wrote an article indicating that he could not tell if the vaccine was actually safe or not.
Despite the 14 heart attacks in the test group, the ACIP committee voted unanimously to approve this vaccine. Is this how settled science is conducted? It is crystal clear that they have knowingly turned innocent American citizens, and probably Canadians too, into a heart attack test group.
The good news is that by May of 2020, we should know the results of the tests.
Is it any wonder that people have lost confidence in vaccines?
The other thing that's a trend and an issue is not just confidence in providers, but confidence of healthcare providers. We have a very wobbly health professional frontline that is starting to question vaccines and the safety of vaccines. When the frontline professionals are starting to question, or they don't feel like they have enough confidence about the safety to stand up to it to the person asking them the questions. I mean, most medical school curriculums, even nursing curriculums, I mean, in medical school, you're lucky if you have a half day on vaccines, never mind keeping up to date with all this.
Oh no, according to Dr. Larson, we have a very wobbly healthcare professional frontline that is starting to question the safety of vaccines. Even though we have no safety studies, we can't let that happen. Poor medical professionals, they just lack confidence to answer questions from moms and dads because in medical school, this is a quote, you're lucky if you've had half a day on vaccines. Are you starting to feel like we're getting snookered when it comes to vaccine safety? It's time to stand up to the tyranny, and it's time to stand up to the lies. Vaccines are the number one health freedom issue of our day. There's no doubt about that. And we need your help to continue our mission that began over two decades ago. Have you benefited from the documentary thus far? Are you enraged that groups like ours who are trying to spread truth are being heavily censored?
If you've learned something new, been inspired or angered, and want to help save lives or just love how it feels to support a good cause, then please consider owning the complete docuseries. And when you purchase today, we'll give you an extra set of DVDs and books to give to your friends, family, or even pediatrician.
Your support allows us to continue spreading the truth for free, just like we're doing right now.
Here's Bobby Kennedy explaining why vaccines do not need to be safety tested.
Well, they said if we call it a medicine, all medicines under the law have to be safety tested against a double-blind placebo randomized test, usually for 5 years. We can't do that. So we're going to call them something different. We're going to call them biologics, and we're going to make it so they don't have to be tested at all. And the industry, when it exploded in 1989, took advantage of that loophole, and they brought all of these new products to market. None of them have been tested. Not one of the 72 vaccines currently on the schedule, mandated for our children, has ever been tested against a placebo. That means that nobody can scientifically tell you what the risk profile of that product is. Nobody can tell you that that product is going to save more lives than it can take with any scientific basis whatsoever. And how can we, as a society, as a government, as a Democratic Party, be mandating products for our children when we cannot tell them what the risk is of that product? Now, all of the vaccines on the schedule and every medical product are required to put their whatever safety tests they do. And many of them say not one has ever used a placebo, but some of them do safety testing anyway, maybe like the polio vaccine for 48 hours. The hepatitis B vaccine that's been given to every child in this country the day they're born, 5 days. That means if that baby dies on day six, it never happened. If the baby gets a seizure on day six, it never happened. If the baby gets food allergies and is diagnosed 3 years later, or autism or autoimmune disease, it never happened. That way they can say that they're safe. The weird thing was there was one vaccine, the MMR, the vaccine that all of this hoopla is about, that was the only vaccine that has no safety testing listed on its insert. And for many years, Dell and I have been saying, that's weird. did they not do any? Or what happened? So we sued HHS. And we said, that way they can say that they're safe. The weird thing was there was one vaccine, the MMR, the vaccine that all of this hoopla is about, that was the only vaccine that has no safety testing listed on its insert. And for many years, Dell and I have been saying, that's weird. did they not do any? Or what happened? So we sued HHS. Where is it? Is there any safety testing to the MMR? So 3 weeks ago, they gave us the safety testing. There were 800 kids. Normally, you have 20,000 kids in one of these, 20,000 subjects. There's 800 in 8 separate tests for 100 each. For a drug that they are going to give to billions of people. And 50, and the testing lasted only 42 days. 50% of the kids who were involved in that study had gastrointestinal illnesses, serious ones, some of them for the full 42 days. 50% had respiratory illnesses, some of them for 42 days. This is a product that is worse, according to its own records, than the illness that it's pretending to prevent.
There are already studies that are showing all around the world that people who have measles as children, let me say this the right way, people who did not have measles as children and were vaccinated for measles, they have a 67% increased risk of developing non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. They have a 333% increased risk of developing Hodgkin's lymphoma. And if a woman had measles and mumps as a child, her risk of ovarian cancer is cut in half. We're talking right there, simply by having these natural infections as children, we just saved, you know, tens of thousands of lives, if not hundreds of thousands of lives in America alone. Yet they want to talk about some immune-suppressed child, the one child out there that may get the measles. By the way, no deaths. Measles has killed no one in any of the outbreaks over the last decade, even though this heightened stress, yet hundreds of thousands of people are dying of these cancers that science is showing if you just had the childhood measles infection and mumps, your body was actually being primed to protect you from cancers. Heart disease. Most of the studies show that at the very minimum, you would cut down heart disease by 10% if people had measles and mumps as children. That right there, that kills, I think, 650,000 people a year. You just save 65,000 people by simply letting a child get the measles. Those are the discussions we should be having. And so when we talk about trivial childhood illness, it's not only taking vaccines that are toxic, incredibly toxic, for a trivial childhood illness like measles or chickenpox or rotavirus or things like this that really don't kill people living in a modern country like we live in. It's worse than that. Not only are we adding toxins to our body, we're stopping our body from being designed to protect us from much more serious issues in our future.
Dell is absolutely correct. Studies are showing that natural exposure to measles and mumps and other childhood diseases like chickenpox confers protection from much more serious conditions like cancer and heart disease. Were you aware that Dell's Informed Consent Action Network and Bobby Kennedy teamed up to take on the DHHS for vaccine safety violations?
The lawsuit brought forth evidence that vaccine safety has been neglected for over 30 years. Here's the scoop. The National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986 requires DHHS to take responsibility for improving the efficacy and safety of vaccines, and it charged them with continuous monitoring and improving of adverse event reporting. The DHHS is also tasked with providing a report on improvements by the Mandate for Safer Childhood Vaccine Clause to Congress at least every 2 years. Guess what Dell and Bobby found out? DHHS has not even met one time in 30 years. Just to reiterate, the 1986 Act required them to meet every 2 years to continuously work on vaccine safety improvements and report to Congress, and they've never met a single time. This is mind-boggling.
They sued the government and won, but the U.S. government isn't the only one getting sued and losing.
The four companies that make all 72 of our vaccines, Merck, Sanofi, GlaxoSmithKline, and Pfizer, are four of the most corrupt companies in the world. Those four companies collectively, they're serial felons. They've paid $35 billion in the last 10 years for falsifying science, defrauding regulators, lying to doctors, selling drugs that they knew were poisonous and that were going to kill people. Why does anybody believe it? It requires a kind of cognitive dissonance to say, yeah, they're doing that with all their other products, but they're not doing it with vaccines.
We've written a second book called Plague of Corruption, and Plague of Corruption essentially centers on the corruption in vaccine court and the idea in the science, in the media, in the news media. Our journals are literally fake news. So what we've done is we've covered it up at every level. And yes, it's trillions of dollars, but it's everything else. It reveals four decades, maybe five or six, of corruption, where, for instance, we know the polio vaccine has always caused polio. And that there was another woman scientist whose career and life were destroyed by her refusing to give up that information and make that public. So this has been going on for 40 or 50 years. So it's trillions of dollars, and it's our entire medical public health machine would simply break down from lack of trust, because one can't even imagine the evil of inoculating these known carcinogens and known viruses into vulnerable children. Well, there's nothing about any of this that has anything to do with public health. It's simply the wealth of public officials.
The underlying reason for people to react in the way they react from the pro-vaccine lobby is manifold. I mean, some people just ideologically believe in vaccination. Some people are part of a bureaucracy like the CDC, and the collective responsibility is to protect vaccination policy. Not necessarily protect children, but to protect vaccination policy. And they will do everything they can to justify that. Well, he told me to do that, and he's doing it as well, and my boss told me. So I'm just a functionary here. I just do what I'm told. Any number of excuses for doing what they do. From the pharmaceutical company's perspective, it's a lot of money, a huge amount of money, a massive market. And they don't want to lose that by the truth coming out. So that's really their reason. So people operate in this way for different reasons, and it's really a question that I would love to put to them as a filmmaker. Why did you do this? Why did the CDC pursue this program of intensifying the vaccination program when they've never done the proper safety studies or never demanded the proper safety studies of the industry? It's a very good question, and I don't have an answer. It seems to me utter madness. They know that they committed fraud in the setting of the MMR vaccine study. They know they did that. So beyond a certain point, when you have knowledge, then it becomes deliberate. If you continue with a policy beyond the point of knowledge that there's a problem that you could address and prevent, then it is deliberate. So they are deliberately harming children right now. Why they would want to intensify that by adding more vaccines to the schedule that are untested, I have absolutely no idea. It is utter madness. But I'm afraid that government bureaucracies, particularly when they're driven by links to very, very powerful corporate institutions like pharmaceutical companies, tend to behave in that way. Who knows what they have on them? Who knows? I don't know. And I, again, this is a question that as a filmmaker I would love to pose to them. What madness possesses you to want to go on doing this without first saying, hang on, let's just pause, let's just stop, let's just go back and reevaluate what we're doing to see if it's safe? Why continue helter-skelter down this path? I don't know.
You know what the ultimate authority is? The Institute of Medicine. That is what Congress named the Institute of Medicine to be the ultimate authority on vaccine safety. And you know what the Institute of Medicine says? Is it says there are 150 diseases that we think are caused by vaccines. CDC, you have to study them. They said that in 1994, CDC refused. They said it again in 1998, CDC refused. They said it again in 2011, they say it every year. The Institute of Medicine says we have no idea whether these vaccines are causing this huge chronic disease epidemic. That is the ultimate authority, not WHO, not CDC.
The Institute of Medicine says they do not know whether vaccines are safe. But then again, so did the World Health Organization at the December 2nd, 2019 Vaccine Safety Summit.
But despite their admissions that they do not have good safety studies and they do not know whether vaccines are actually safe, which you would think would be a good reason to continue discussing vaccine safety, the push to censor truthful vaccine debate online accelerated into high gear in 2019.
We're seeing, you know, on the other side, censorship and book burning. We're, you know, returning to a dark age. You know, Adam Schiff, I'm going to talk about this in my talk. Adam Schiff reached out and said, I want, you know, Instagram, Facebook, you know, Twitter to start censoring anyone that's questioning the safety of vaccines. He wrote a letter to Amazon saying you need to remove all books and movies that question the safety of vaccines or that say that there's other ways to heal your kids with autism. And so my film Vaxxed, which is what started this whole thing for me, has been removed from Amazon. You can't find my film anywhere except at VaxxedTheMovie.com, which is the distributor's website, whereas it used to be free with Amazon Prime. So for the first time in a really long time, certainly in America, censorship and book burning is now the approach. And what that says to me is that this agenda and this mindset, this government and the way it's working now is on its way out the door. There's never been a regime that's decided that burning literature and burning ideas was the way to win. Every time that's ever happened in the world, that marked the end of that paradigm. So I believe we're coming to the end of that paradigm. But boy, it's going to be intense.
It is going to be intense, but we will win. Ironically, Schiff's letter calling for censorship contained the exact misinformation he was asking Facebook to censor. For example, Schiff states that there is no evidence to suggest that vaccines cause life-threatening or disabling diseases.
Schiff was quickly blasted by Congressman Bill Posey in a letter to Facebook boss Mark Zuckerberg. Posey's letter laid out the many U.S. government admissions of vaccine harm and payouts for vaccine injuries and deaths. In the letter, which we have up on the screen right now, Congressman Posey asked Zuckerberg, quote, if vaccines do not cause injury, why has the Vaccine Injury Trust Fund paid out $4.061 billion for vaccine injuries?
Good point, Congressman. Vaccines do injure. Vaccines do kill. This is the most important issue of our day. And we need your help to continue our mission that began over 2 decades ago.
Have you learned something new from this documentary? Are you enraged that groups like ours, who are trying to spread truth about vaccines, are being heavily censored by social media and tech giants? Then please consider supporting our cause by owning the complete series.
And when you purchase today, we'll give you an extra set of DVDs and books to give to your family, your friends, or even your pediatrician. Your support allows us to continue spreading the truth for free.
Also, we're going to donate a portion of each sale to charities that are dedicated to spreading the truth about vaccines and keeping our kids safe. Simply click the banner below to join the movement and support our mission. Thank you in advance.
It's no coincidence that a whole host of chronic and debilitating diseases, neurological disorders, and autoimmune diseases began to skyrocket in 1989 with the tripling of the CDC's childhood vaccine schedule.
There's a list of those diseases, which is the list of diseases that suddenly became epidemic in 1989. And the exact same list, every one of those diseases, is listed as a side effect on the vaccine inserts of the manufacturers. So, and by the way, the 20 top selling pharmaceutical drugs, those four manufacturers, are drugs that are marketed to treat a disease that is listed as a vaccine side effect on their own products. Those companies are making $50 billion a year selling vaccines. When I was a kid, it was $270 million. Today, it's $50 billion. And they're making $500 billion a year selling the drugs that treat those diseases. And they have gotten us into this mass psychosis where we have accepted this Satan's bargain of trading a few harmless, self-limiting childhood rashes, measles. I'm a measles survivor, right? Thank God. Chicken pox. Everybody got it, mumps, rubella. Nobody cares. All of those diseases, we've traded those diseases, which are pharmaceutical. You know what the treatment for measles is? Vitamin A. You think you can patent it? No. So instead, we've traded those self-limiting diseases that last a week, keep you out of food, the cure is chicken soup, and we've traded those for a series of chronic lifetime illnesses that have, that have our kids on diabetes medication, on arthritis medication, on ADD, Adderall, albuterol inhalers, Advair inhalers, EpiPens, all of this crap, which they are now addicted to for the rest of their life, and those same pharmaceutical companies have turned them into permanent consumers of their high-priced products.
They had a perfect business model. That is not good business for America. And someone, whatever side of the aisle they're on, needs to get that. And if they don't get it, they don't get the vote. They don't get voted in. And that's it. And nothing else matters. This is the issue. This is the issue of the moment. And the presidential election must be decided upon this issue.
I believe that vaccine freedom and the vaccine injury and everything we've talked about today should be at the front of every single candidate in the 2020 election for any race in any city, any state, and certainly at the presidential level.
I think vaccinations is the most important discussion, period. I was a progressive liberal my whole life. I grew up in Boulder, Colorado. I'm an environmentalist. I think that we are polluting our air and our water and our food supply and the earth. And I think we should care about that. Our children have to grow up in it. But right now, for my friends that are arguing with me that, well, I'm just going to vote for the Democrats because they care about the environment. Unfortunately, right now, Democrats, as a pillar of their party, are going to push forced vaccinations for all. It's essentially the writing's on the wall. And so I say to them, I get it. The earth is a problem. We should be looking at it. I don't want polluted air and water. But we're talking about the very elements we're trying to keep out of our air and our water and our food being injected directly into our bodies.
If you just let your family members know and to wake people up and also to wake up our younger generation, that they be aware, I think that's what's really going to make this difference, is that the next generation is aware of what's going on. And once we start that momentum, I don't think there's any stopping it. I've had my eyes open so much and been able to help my family too, and that's the real that's the great part, where my own family members are tuning in and watching the events. And I think really my mom watching The Truth About Vaccines, which I forgot to say on stage, is what opened her eyes. It wasn't any of the movies, not that those aren't great that people have put out, but it just, different things grab different people. And she watched The Truth About Vaccines, and me being vaccine injured, having had encephalitis at 3 months from the DPT, really, she finally saw the light, and that was so important. So I'm so grateful that it's impacted my lives, because it's made it easier for me to coexist with my family members, because now they're seeing the light as well.
Anything that goes against orthodox mainstream medicine, which is the drugging and carving up
Dr. Billy DeMoss, DeMoss.
I mean, that whole system's done, dude. I mean, they're hanging on by just a thread, and the only thing that's keeping them alive is the controlled media and the bought-out politicians. So, again, it's only a matter of time. More and more people wake up, because if you can't see that sinking ship, which it is, and again, let me give kudos to medicine where they deserve it. They are great at emergency crisis. Like, you get burned, you know, third-degree burns, or you're having a heart attack, or you just get crushed in a car accident, you're going to go to emergency room. That's what they're great at. They're good at emergency crisis care. But they should stay the heck out of healthcare, because they have nothing to provide health to anybody. And that's why they're so desperate right now. That's why you see all these measures of censorship, because they know they're losing the game, because there's no way you can perpetuate this myth anymore. It's done.
We need to reevaluate public health. We need to redefine the fact that
Dr. Sherry Tenpenny,
high vaccination rates and low infection rates of a very short list of infections. We need to look at a complete moratorium on the entire vaccination program, because of all these known contaminants and all these things that we may be causing, autoimmune disease, neurologic, and cancer type of problems. And we need to actually take action and get involved and stand up against all of these things that are taking away our rights to refuse.
If you do not speak, if you are afraid to speak, then you are a part of the problem. And you will never, ever forgive yourself if we lose this. And you watch your children getting sick because they're being lined up to be injected with things they have no control over. And you're getting Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and dying earlier and sicker on more drugs because you can't stop the injections the government is giving you. When you're laying in your bed and that's happening, you say to yourself, you know what? I probably should have said something. Let's not find ourselves in that position. We're being called upon right now, the way our founding fathers were called upon, to stand up for what this country believes in, why we're here, and what this world should be celebrating, which is pure, complete, total liberty and freedom.
I'm from University of Virginia, and in the 1770s, Thomas Jefferson and the people who wrote the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence were in part upset because the Church of England said, if you don't worship at the Church of England, you don't go to school. Well, that, you know, now in 2020, if you don't worship at the Church of Big Pharma, you don't go to school. You don't participate in our freedoms. If that's not at the basic level of the Constitution and everything our country stands on, I just don't know what is.
We have to protest. It is absolutely imperative that at every level we protest and we refuse. We simply have to refuse in numbers that are sufficient to terrify the politicians into doing the right thing. It has to be the case that we say to the politicians, you work for us, not the pharmaceutical companies, and we are going to determine whether you are elected or not. And we will elect only those people who will look after our interests and not those of the pharmaceutical
industry. Andrew Wakefield, W-A-K-E-F-I-E-L-D.
A very bleak future. And people need to wake up to that. They need to put everything else to one side. The environment isn't going to kill us in anything like the same time frame that vaccines are going to kill us. Vaccines, if we have one in two children by 2032, which is the predicted numbers based upon the CDC's own data, one in two children with autism, then you have an environment where you either have autism or you look after someone with autism. There is no economy. The environment's irrelevant. Public policy, foreign policy, everything is irrelevant. There's nothing, there's no standing army, there's no police force, there's no economy, there's nothing. And so that's what we face. And people, it's so enormous that people really can't even conceptualize where we are. But I've watched this emerge over the last 20, 30 years. And I know it to be true, that this is what we face. And autism is just a small part of it. Small part of the damage done. And they have 270 new vaccines in the pipeline. So if you're happy with 72 doses by age 18, then are you going to be happy when it's in the hundreds? I doubt it very much.
What is your feeling about the climate now around this vaccine science?
Terrific. It's very difficult to work with serenity. We are attacked every day from every part of the landscape. The general press is aggressive, the health authorities are aggressive, the government is not supporting, and it is a difficult issue. But it is such an important issue that we must insist. We must insist.
We agree with Dr. Roman Girardi. We must insist. We are at a crossroads. The time is now to stand up to tyranny and fight for truth and freedom. An unprecedented attack on civil liberties and the right to dissent is being led by a new privileged ruling class whose power is not derived from aristocratic titles, wealth, and political influence linked to genetic heritage and ownership of land like it used to be. The power of the new ruling class in America is derived from academic titles, wealth, and political influence linked to corporatized government that seeks ownership of our physical bodies primarily through vaccines.
The kingpin of the accelerating global vaccine agenda is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and their brainchild, the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, which they launched in 2000 to increase and improve vaccine delivery globally. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is the world's largest private foundation with more than $50 billion in assets. It's the second largest donor to the World Health Organization next to the United States government.
The Gates Foundation's $10 billion investment in the decade of vaccines ushered in the darkest period in medical history. Between 2010 and 2020, an obscene amount of money was intentionally directed at creating the vaccine propaganda machine that has us at this current crossroads right now.
The propaganda schemes and methods unleashed by the decade of vaccines has inflicted incalculable damage on the people of the world by inciting hatred, marginalization, and the vilification of anyone who questions the safety of vaccines.
It is during this decade of vaccines that we've reaped the bitter harvest of philanthropic wealth, wielding its power against the people, against truth, against honest science, and against health freedom.
If your life has not been touched by an adverse vaccine reaction, there is no guarantee it won't happen tomorrow. Government electronic medical records tracking systems are monitoring every vaccine you do and do not take, and many new vaccines are being developed by industry and government that will be mandated for children and adults alike.
Isn't it long past due that we draw a line in the sand on this web of deception and lies? Unjust laws enacted today can be repealed tomorrow, but only if we wake up, if we stand up, and we never ever give up. And it's vital that you join with us to wake up your friends, your family, and even your pediatrician and your local politicians.
And the best way you can wake them up is by owning the entire docuseries, because when you purchase today, we'll give you an extra set of DVDs and books to give to your friends, your family, pediatrician, even local politicians. Please consider owning the complete set today.
Your support allows us to continue spreading the truth for free, like we're doing right now. And also, we're going to be donating a portion of each sale to charities that are dedicated to spreading the truth about vaccines and keeping our kids safe.
John Stuart Mill once said, "The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing." It's time for you to do something. It's time for all of us to band together, stand up against tyranny, and fight for health freedom. Simply click the banner below to join the movement and support our mission. Thanks in advance, and God bless.
We wanted to take a moment to address the coronavirus and the vaccines which are already in the pipeline. The move to start human trials of coronavirus vaccines without proper animal safety studies has prompted outcries already. Even the most vocal vaccine proponents like Paul Offit and Peter Hotez, they're now saying that skipping the animal studies could result in unacceptable risks. It's bizarre, but we actually agree with both of these men on this issue.
We'll address the coronavirus vaccine more in a moment, but first, we wanted to address some of the potential misinformation about COVID-19 coronavirus, which has drastically affected the way we live our daily lives here in the United States and across the globe.
Much of the USA and the world is in lockdown, self-quarantine, and previously jam-packed places like Grand Central Station, which used to see millions of visitors a day, and airports, which were previously bustling, are now virtually empty, with thousands of flights being canceled every day. Basically, coronavirus has created a bunch of ghost towns.
We already showed you in episode 8 how the mainstream media tends to be all in the same script. So, is it possible that they are all on the same script with COVID-19?
For example, toward the end of March, when New York City became the epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak, in the United States at least, Governor Cuomo was calling for more ventilators and more hospital beds, since he said it had become a war zone in New York City. On multiple channels, we were shown this footage, which appeared to be of a semi-busy ICU at New York City in a hospital.
However, we soon discovered that it wasn't actually New York City. That was footage previously shown by Sky News of Italy on March 22nd, 3 days before.
Check it out. You can see the CBS broadcast of March 25th on the top and the Sky News broadcast of March 22nd on the bottom. Same footage. And by ICU standards, not really all that busy.
But maybe all the mainstream media was given the wrong footage. Okay.
It's possible.
Maybe it was a mistake, right? Another bizarre video that we've seen is alleged footage from a New York City ICU ward of a hospital worker using a ventilator on a coronavirus patient. Here's about 10 seconds from that news clip from Channel 4 out of the UK.
The New York governor today begged President Trump to send help now, saying he'd been forced to buy ventilators from China because it was like bidding on eBay to secure enough in his own country.
Stop the video right there. Upon closer inspection, we can clearly see that this is a mannequin. We're not making this stuff up. Check out the photo. Check out the words on the sign. Again, this was aired on Channel 4 News in the UK. It's really strange, isn't it?
Okay. So maybe they got the footage mixed up.
Twice. Maybe. It's possible.
But are we sure that everyone who dies with coronavirus actually died from the virus? The CDC has given guidance on how to report a coronavirus death. Check this out.
From the CDC's official guidance, quote, it is important to emphasize that coronavirus disease 2019 or COVID-19 should be reported on the death certificate for all decedents where the disease caused or is assumed to have caused or contributed to the death.
Did you get that? The CDC is instructing hospital workers to assume that COVID-19 was the cause of death.
Then listen to this. If the decedent had other chronic conditions, such as COPD or asthma, that may have also contributed, these conditions are supposed to be reported in part two. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we're not suggesting there is no virus or no deaths. We're just thinking logically and exploring all possibilities here. What if the pandemic isn't really as bad as the media is telling us?
What if the mainstream media scripts are being written by someone who has an agenda? And that agenda would benefit from mass hysteria. Is it possible that the end game is for Big Pharma to make billions on a vaccine to prevent a future pandemic?
A vaccine certainly would be great news for Bill Gates, who just announced his foundation is going to spend billions of dollars to help build factories for 7 possible coronavirus vaccine makers.
Spend is probably the wrong word there. Invest is more like it, right? And what a better way to ensure a good return on your investment than to make sure that governments mandate the coronavirus vaccine? Oh yeah, that's what he wants. and he recently got busted on a TED Talk, and they edited out a sentence, but Gary Franchi and Zero Hedge got the original footage.
Why would they remove it unless they wanted to hide it? Check out what Gates really wants.
Eventually, what we'll have is certificates of who's a recovered person, who's a vaccinated person, because you don't want people moving around the world where you'll have some countries that won't have it under control, sadly. You don't want to completely block off the ability for those, you know, people to go there and come back and move around.
So eventually there will be sort of this digital immunity proof that, you know, will help facilitate the global reopening up.
A digital certificate or proof of vaccination, that's the plan.
Why would Gates be pushing for this? Here's why. Microsoft and Gavi, which we just mentioned, are planning on controlling the Global Vaccination Digital ID Program, announced in 2019 at the ID 2020 Alliance Summit in New York City.
In the latest batch of insanity, there is a movement toward a registration system where people will be designated as immune or vaccinated, and only with appropriate and verifiable identification will citizens be permitted to engage in society.
In other words, in order to be let out in public, the human cattle are going to have to obey and get jabbed. This is not alarmism, and these are not scare tactics. These are observable changes that are in motion right now, and a conclusion that is rational, it's supported, and it has historical precedent. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, the NIAID, you see him on TV all the time, he's already set the stage for a mandatory coronavirus vaccine.
By the way, Dr. Fauci is on the leadership council of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and previously worked with Gates on his Global Vaccine Action Plan. Have you figured out yet why he has been so against using anti-malaria drug, hydroxychloroquine? Because he and his buddy Gates want to give everyone a vaccine instead.
The good news is that as of today, mid-April 2020, Surgeon General Jerome Adams explained that the Coronavirus Task Force has effectively dumped the Gates CDC WHO predictive contagion model. And they're now working with what he calls the real data. And he believes that based on this data, that businesses will begin to reopen as early as May and others in June. And by the time you watch this video, you're going to know a lot more than we do today. This runs contrary to the fear-mongering that's going on right now with Fauci and Gates, who have threatened that businesses may not reopen for a year, or at least until their conveniently patented vaccination is available for everyone.
In episode 6, we heard from Dr. Judy Mikovits, who discovered that a mouse retrovirus, XMRV, had contaminated the MMR and the polio encephalitis vaccines given to American children and soldiers and was causing a national health crisis.
She wanted to sound the alarm, but she was silenced by the powers that be and instructed to sign a paper stating that her studies finding retroviruses in vaccines were fraudulent, even though the studies were legitimate.
Due to her ethics and convictions, she refused. And as a result of refusing to lie, she had all of her research illegally confiscated. She went to jail and lost her position as a government researcher and scientist, and has been blackballed from receiving any more National Institutes of Health grants, effectively ending her career as a scientist.
Thanks to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Children's Health Defense, we just found out who it was that pressured Dr. Mikovits to lie to the American public.
What Tony Fauci, Ian Lipkin, and Harold Varmus did was pressure me to be silent and withdraw our manuscript. I refused again. When I refused to be silent, Dr. Fauci stepped in and ordered that my computers and notebooks be confiscated and orchestrated the retraction of our science paper. He then removed
all of my funding and prevented me from getting a job in government research from 2012 forward.
So that's how Dr. Mikovits, a woman of integrity and honesty, was repaid for trying to help us. Fauci made her pay for not lying about XMRV, which remains in American vaccines. It's likely that hundreds of millions have been injected with these contaminated vaccines.
And hundreds of millions have also been exposed to COVID-19. Did you know that in 2015, under the Obama administration, $3.7 million was transferred from National Institutes of Health to the Wuhan Institute of Virology to study the coronavirus? President Trump just announced that this is under investigation. Let's listen to Dr. Buttar discussing this topic.
It goes back to 2014. The U.S. government decided, based upon certain virologists at that time, saying that, look, there's no justification for this kind of research. There's a potential for it to cause harm, cause a pandemic. So there's no justification for us to do this type of research. So the government passed a moratorium in 2014. Fauci approved budgets to be, monies to be sectioned for this type of research. So basically, and I'm getting really, every time I think about this, it gets me really flustered because I'm so angry that he basically broke the law. He more than broke the law. He created this entire casket that we're seeing with the world shutdown was created by this initial aspect back in 2015. He broke the law. He went against government moratoriums. He took taxpayer money and he funded research that has now led to the COVID-19. In 2017, he was documented at Georgetown University saying that there will be a pandemic that this presidency will face, that this term will face. How did he know that in 2017 that something was going to happen in 2018, 19, or 2020? There's no, you can't predict the market from 3 days from today, what's going to happen. How did he know that there was going to be a pandemic? He stated, the president of this president will face a pandemic. The exact quotes, I don't want to say the exact words. You guys have the video footage.
There is no question that there will be a challenge to the coming administration in the arena of infectious diseases, both chronic infectious diseases in the sense of already ongoing disease, and we have certainly a large burden of that. But also there will be a surprise outbreak. There will be a surprise outbreak. There will be a surprise outbreak.
He's a criminal. He's broken the law. He's gone against the government. I mean, to me, that seems like it's a traitorous thing to do when the government has passed a regulation and he's at one of the highest levels in the NIH. He's got a directorship at the NIH. And then he breaks the law. He breaks the moratorium and then funds research against something that could potentially cause harm throughout the entire world. And he's in collusion with the foreign government.
Tony Fauci failed us. He has proven that he is not trustworthy. Are you now prepared to trust him when it comes to the coronavirus vaccine? Do you remember a few years ago when President Trump was going to appoint our good friend Bobby Kennedy as the head of the Commission on Vaccination Safety and Scientific Integrity? Eventually, Bobby said that the Trump administration never contacted him after the initial meetings. We always wondered why President Trump seemingly dropped the ball on this issue. Here's one of the reasons why.
Then the second time I saw him was the March after that, so March 2017 in the White House. In both of those two meetings, he asked me if vaccines weren't a bad thing, because he was considering a commission to look into ill effects of vaccines. And somebody, his name is Robert Kennedy Jr., was advising him that vaccines were causing bad things. And I said, no, that's a dead end. That would be a bad thing. Don't do that.
So Gates told Trump, no, that's a bad thing. Don't do that. Do not investigate vaccines. Why? Well, you might find that they were cultured in aborted fetal tissue. And that includes the coronavirus vaccine coming to a doctor's office near you. That's right, Moderna's mRNA 1273 vaccine, which they are racing to bring to market, was produced using HEK293 aborted fetal cells. Who elected these guys as health dictators so that they could sink so many of America's freedoms? That's right, nobody elected them.
Earlier in this episode, we saw some behind closed doors footage from the World Health Organization Vaccine Safety Summit in December 2019, where they admitted that they do not have good safety studies on vaccines and they do not know how many people that vaccines have killed.
In light of these stark admissions, one would think that the WHO would be reticent to push any more vaccines until proper safety studies had been done, right? No, no.
Check out this shocking video clip from Dr. Michael Ryan from the World Health Organization, who leads the team responsible for treating COVID-19.
In most parts of the world, due to lockdown, most of the transmission that's actually happening in many countries now is happening in the household, at family level. In some senses, transmission has been taken off the streets and pushed back into family units. Now we need to go and look in families to find those people who may be sick and remove them and isolate them in a safe and dignified manner.
Just so you know, we're coming to your house, seizing your children, removing them from the house by force, and isolating them in a safe and dignified manner. I don't think so, Dr. Ryan. That may work in the UK, but you try that in the USA, and you're going to find out that the majority of us still believe wholeheartedly in all the amendments listed in the Bill of Rights.
Sadly, the United States Constitution really doesn't seem to matter anymore. According to Dr. Ron Paul, what is most dangerous throughout this coronavirus pandemic is that although this virus will eventually disappear, the assault on our civil liberties is not likely to be reversed. From this point on, whenever local officials, county officials, state governors, or federal bureaucrats decide there is sufficient reason to suspend the Constitution, they will not hesitate to do so. Anyone who challenges the suspension of the Constitution for their own good will be labeled unpatriotic and perhaps even reported to the authorities.
Dr. Paul continues. He says the government is justified in canceling the Constitution, we are told, because we are in an emergency situation caused by the COVID-19 virus. But do people forget that the United States Constitution itself was written and adopted while we were in an emergency situation? Did the framers of the Constitution fail to add an 11th Amendment to the Bill of Rights saying, oh, by the way, none of this really counts if we get sick? Of course not. Those who wrote our Constitution understood that these rights are not granted by the government, but rather by our Creator. Thus, it was never a question as to when or under what conditions they could be suspended. The government had no authority to suspend them at all because it did not grant them in the first place.
Wake up, people. Don't go radio silent on this issue. It's time to stand up to the medical tyranny. It's time to draw the line in the sand.
I'm so proud of the people in my home state of Texas for drawing their line in the sand, as they recently came out in droves to protest the loss of liberty and the draconian quarantine laws that are violating our constitutional rights.
Will you stand up and defend vaccine freedom here in America and across the globe? It's your health, your family, your choice, and our mission continues. No forced vaccination, not in America, not on our watch. We conclude with this telling quote from Bobby Kennedy, which he made during his acceptance speech when we gave him a Lifetime Achievement Award in December 2019 here in Nashville.
People talk about big government and how it's a threat to democracy. And it is a threat. When government can spy on you, like our government is doing to us today, when they can torture people, which is something America never allowed, when they can read our mail and store our emails and do all this stuff, when they're, you know, everybody knows it's a danger. But the biggest danger from the beginning of our country's history, the perception under our most visionary, beloved political leaders, was that the bigger threat to American democracy was outsized corporate power. Thomas Jefferson fought like hell to make sure corporations could not get charters, because he said they are eternal, they have no soul, and they will grow, and they will overwhelm democracy. And if you let them form with these, you know, with these limited liability charters, we will regret it, and our democracy will not survive. Andrew Jackson said the same thing. He made his bones fighting the banks to try to make sure that the banks could not get their charters. Teddy Roosevelt, a Republican, said that American democracy would never be destroyed by a foreign power, because we're too big and we're too powerful. But he said it would be subverted by malefactors of great wealth who would undermine it from within. Dwight Eisenhower, a Republican, his most important and famous speech ever. On my birthday in 1960, as he was leaving office and my uncle was coming in, he gave a speech in which he warned America against the domination by a military corporate industrial complex, the unity of corporate and government power. Abraham Lincoln, founder of the Republican Party, and the greatest president probably in our history, at the height of the Civil War, said, I have the South in front of me, and I have the corporations behind me, and for my nation, I fear the corporations more. And Franklin Roosevelt said during World War II that the domination of government by corporate power is, quote, the essence of fascism. And Benito Mussolini, who had an insider's view of that process, said essentially the same thing. He complained that fascism should not be called fascism, it should be called corporatism, because it was the merger of state and corporate power. And today, you know, we are living at what they warned us about. There is a seamless unity between CDC, EPA, HHS, or FDA, HHS, the regulatory agencies, and the vaccine companies. And they have turned Americans into commodities. And we have to understand as a nation that the domination of business by government is called communism. The domination of government by business is called fascism. Now, our job is to walk that narrow trail in between and keep big government at bay with our left, with our right hand, keep big business at bay with our left, and walk down that road of free market capitalism and democracy. And in order to do that, we need a public that is educated, that understands the science, that understands all and appreciates all the milestones of tyranny, and that is willing and ready to stand up and defend the values of our country and our culture and our children's health, no matter what the individual cost to ourselves is. And I know everybody in this room is already in that category. Our challenge now is to go out and find all the other people, the people, the men and women of goodwill in this country, who, if they understood what we know, would be with us 100%. And we need to take back our country, our children's health, and our democracy. So thank you very much.
Special thanks to Del Bigtree and the High Wire team. D-E-L-B-I-G-T-R-E-E.